And I think Bosa could maybe fall. They could opt for a guy like Quinnen Williams, who is tearing up the college football playoff. I mean, they literally had three guys on him. Oklahoma did, the Alabama defensive tackle, and he blew the play up in the backfield at one point. Literally swarmed Kyler Murray and the running back. I mean, the guy is as, and it's funny because Ed Oliver is another talented defensive tackle that everybody wants to anoint as the next Aaron Donald, where Quinnen Williams one season. I mean, this guy got Heisman votes. That's how dominant of a defensive tackle this guy is. I mean, takes double teams on with ease, no problem kind of thing. And so I think a team could fall in love with him, and we don't know what's going to happen in Arizona. They fired their coach, their GM, who's been there for a long time, is probably gone too. You know, they spent a lot of money to get a guy like Chandler Jones on the outside. I don't know if they're ready to, you know, Marcus Golden has played well for them, another edge guy. So, and honestly, the quarterback market is something that I will never discredit. I will never discount. Who knows how much somebody wants Dwayne Haskins.
But you told me before we started here, you don't have a single quarterback with a first-round grade.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, when I said that, I kind of forgot about Haskins. I think I'm not in love with him. You know, like I said, I'm a Miami Dolphins fan. They need a franchise quarterback. I won't be necessarily thrilled if they draft him. Okay. He's had one really good season, and he's a guy that's continued to improve from week one till now.
But
he's
certainly, playing before we get too far into Haskins,
yeah,
the bigger issue with there not being a top-pick quarterback is diminishes the value of trading down. The best value you can get trading down is if someone is trading up to get a quarterback.
Yes.
So that's part of it. It also means there's probably not. Well, let me ask it this way then. Do you think if the Cardinals decide that Williams is the guy, are they in that case likely to try to trade out of the number one pick because Bosa is sort of consensus right now that someone might give them more for Bosa, and then they can take Williams a little later?
I'm not sure. I think that's a really good question. I think another team like a 49ers could maybe block that. You know, they're going to have their ear to the ground. They're going to understand these type of things. I mean, I don't think that, you know, if Quinnen Williams is to be had later.
Let me ask you this. If Arizona said to you, we're more interested in a defensive tackle, but we think Bosa is clearly the number one talent here.
Yeah.
Give us the second pick and a fifth rounder for the first pick. You can have Bosa. We'll take Quinnen Williams at two. But if you don't make the trade, we're taking Bosa.
For the 49ers.
Would you do that as the Niners?
Yes, I would.
You'd spend an extra. You do think Bosa is that good?
Yes.
Better than Kelly, for instance, who looks like the guy. Looks
Josh
like
Allen.
What'd I say, Kelly?
Yeah.
Who's Josh Kelly?
I don't know.
Oof. Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Kentucky.
Yes. Shout out to the Big Blue Nation.
Yeah, I didn't see that, Nash. I don't know what you're talking about. Allen. Not the quarterback, but the pass rusher from Kentucky.
Yes.
You think Bosa is better enough than Allen that you'd be willing to give up an additional pick to move up and ensure that you can take him?
Man, I think it's tough because I think Josh Allen, so he actually committed to the Senior Bowl, which is, I think, a thing that's not taken as serious as it should here in the Bay Area. The Senior Bowl is a really big deal.
And
for
scouts.
And these guys make, we learn about, I mean, think about Baker Mayfield was a guy that teams were worried about maybe going in the second round, and he came into the Senior Bowl, you know, and really balled out. Josh Allen, another guy who was in the Senior Bowl that did well last year. And then outside of that, the crop wasn't too thick. But this year, with all the defensive talent, I mean, there's a lot of guys that could elevate their draft stock. And Josh Allen is a guy that's going to be there that I bet you a lot of people will have a close watch on. I actually have a story coming out about him. Should be today.
On 95.7 The Game.
On 95.7 Why You Should Be Watching Tomorrow versus Penn State.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Because I think Josh Allen is incredible. And like I said earlier, I'm a Kentucky fan, so I've watched quite a bit of Kentucky football as they've tried to get back into relevancy here. I would say it's funny because, you know, I kind of argue I'm arguably the only person in the Bay Area watching, you know, making Kentucky football scheduled programming.
I think that's absolutely
and,
the case.
Yeah, and so I've seen Josh Allen week in and week out, and I've seen the tape, and I'm impressed because this is another guy who's improving, and that's something that I like to watch. With good coaching, can this guy get better? And I think that that is something that's not taken as highly as it should be, if that makes sense. I mean, we all know about how great the NFL workout programs are.
Yep.
And the coaching is so much different. Even, you know, and Josh Allen is a guy that's produced at the SEC, where at Kentucky, where it's not like he's playing on an Alabama defense. And this guy is all over the field. They have, you know, offensive coordinators have one job, stay away from the guy, and they haven't been able to do it in the SEC
and
at the highest level.
Does it worry you at all that as he was doing that, Nick Bosa was working out in a gym somewhere?
Yes. And honestly, it's been my one of the things that I kind of have been hacking at people on Twitter about for a long time is why I saw Tank for Bosa t-shirts mm-hmm. flying around, which could not have irked me more, because really, I mean, that's the state of this, or that's what you want from this organization, to tank for a defensive end, which is just a state of whoever put these shirts out in general. But I want to know why people love Nick Bosa so much. Have you watched? Was last season enough? Because, you know, outside of a handful of games this year, we haven't seen him in the big light. I mean, he would be playing in the Rose Bowl tomorrow against Trey Adams of the University of Washington, who is another top-tier offensive lineman. So that is a primetime matchup that we'd all be tuning in to see. It won't happen. So what are people seeing? I can tell you because I've watched. But without saying, what is it? About? Is it the name? Which is something that people fall in love with. That almost,
I worry about
if you
that.
Just said, hey, I really like Nick Bosa because Joey is a stud, I would be like, okay, I understand. But I mean, I've seen the guy and I understand why scouts love him and I understand why he's the number one guy. But to me, I don't understand the, you know, maybe the
consensus.
Of anointing him the number one here in the Bay Area. I understand maybe scouting websites and draft websites who are guys who are on top of this day in and day out, but just the casual fan, because I write a lot and I get a lot of comments, and I didn't mention Nick Bosa in this player to watch piece, and all these people chimed in, and it was like,
you can't watch him.
And I'm just like, guys, do you not? I'm just want to understand, outside of maybe listening to people talk about how good he is, why people want him so much. And I don't think it's wrong. I think he is as good as advertised, but why?
It's because someone said it that they like on Twitter.
Yeah.
And in Bosa's case, it's because everybody on Twitter
I had to sit down and watch, and I'm lucky to have connections in this industry to get film and whatnot.
Right.
Shout out to my guy Marcus Mosher of The Athletic, who is constantly helping me out and with film and whatnot. And because I had to talk to people and be like, what is the deal with this guy? Because I don't understand.
Okay, so tell us quickly, what is the deal with this guy?
I would say refinement, if that makes sense. This dude is a plug and play guy right now. He's gonna challenge for 10 sacks his first season in the NFL. He has so pass rush repertoire, if that makes sense, to not mm-hmm. get too nerdy here.
Well, that's what makes Khalil Mack so great,
yeah,
right?
Is a thing, not just a bull rush, not just speed, multiple toys. Hands is one of the more important things when it comes to evaluating an edge rusher, and Bosa has that. He will fight with his hands and make college offensive linemen look silly. He'll run into some trouble in the offensive in the NFL, obviously, because guys will be ready for that. But that's just not something you see really from that talented of an edge rusher at that level.
If I can make a basketball comparison, I think it's the sort of thing you see with a Jason Tatum coming out of Duke. And it's why he was able to have such immediate impact.
Yeah.
Is for a 19-year-old in Tatum's case, it's not just that he's very good and very athletic and has the skills. It's the diversity of skills. It's the wider. It's that as a 19-year-old, he seems to have every offensive move in the game in mm-hmm. his arsenal. And
yeah.
with Bosa, defensively, look, the measurables are great. Mm-hmm. He's a tremendous athlete. The pedigree obviously
yeah.
is good, because when healthy, Joey is as good a pass rusher as we have yeah. this side of Khalil Mack. So I get it. But I also get the people who say, I don't know about a guy who sat the year out
yeah.
and we haven't actually seen him on a field in
well,
however
get ready
many
for
months.
It, people. This is just the start. I mean, this is really just the start with the Bosa thing. He opened up a door for a lot of guys to come.
Oh, yeah.
100%
well, it's not even just
get
him.
Get used to it. Yeah.
He is the most extreme case in recent history, but this has been picking up steam for years.
Yeah.
Kids who have a minor injury mid-season and say, you know what? It's not worth it. I'm just going to go work on me and
especially
get drafted
these,
as high as possible.
And it's a small group. It's these top five guys. I mean, you're going to see, you know, Dwayne Haskins, who's arguably quarterback one. He's going to play in the Rose Bowl tomorrow versus a Washington defense that is ultra talented with pros all over the field.
But it's not just top five, because Bryce Love's sitting out, man.
Easily the biggest. I just can't believe that. I don't understand who told him to do that.
Why
because
would he play?
Because he needs to. Like, this guy is a guy that arguably was running back two. heading into the offseason behind David Montgomery of Iowa State. And that's generous. That's me saying I've watched him here in the Bay Area. I'm actually heading out to the Stanford Pro Day this year.
Has he not been worse this year than ever before?
Yes.
Okay, so what good does it do for him to play another bad game?
Because
he has to hope people look at his tape from the 2016 and 17 seasons.
Because bowl season is weirdly, just like any primetime television, taken into account with a bigger deal. I mean, it really is. Unless you're Alabama playing Oklahoma's defense. I guarantee you any scout is throwing that film away because Oklahoma's defense is that bad. You're straight up, you want to get a guy like Irv Smith? It is horrible. I mean, 97th defensive rating out of 116 colleges. That's how bad Oklahoma's defense was. So I'm telling you right now, scouts are not watching that film. That's not the case for Bryce Love and Stanford in their bowl games. You know, they want to see, the scouts are going to watch 5 games, you know, to see if they're interested in the guy.
Fair enough.
3 games, some.
I guess I should.
They want to see the best competition.
I guess what I'm really saying is scouts should be watching more tape than that. I'm Matt Kolsky. It's Tommy Call, future NFL scout, perhaps, with all of the great draft knowledge he brings. Also, 957thegame.com contributor. Catch his work there. And coming up, we get some more NFL expertise as we'll be joined by Austin Gale, the NFL editor for Pro Football Focus. Going to break down what we just saw in the Niners season and what we hopefully will see in the next few months as they continue the rebuilding project. Football talk continues. Next on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
We are back. I'm Matt Kolsky, and sitting just to my right, Tommy Call. A 957thegame.com contributor, as a writer, a podcaster. He's written for a lot of outlets around the Bay, actually.
Yes, sir.
Santa Rosa Press Democrat, San Francisco Examiner.
Raiders Wire.
And more important than anything for our current purposes, a guy with great knowledge within the football scouting community and great contacts within the football scouting community, which is our source for our next guest, Austin Gale, the NFL editor Pro Football Focus. See, I don't rate for football people, but with Tommy, we get good guests. Hello, Austin.
Hey, how you doing, man?
All right, so I want to start you with a question I just asked Tommy. In your mind, is Joey Bosa good enough that if you were the Niners, you'd consider trading the number 2 pick, which could net you Josh Allen, I think pretty much consensus number 2 pass rusher right now, plus something to move up? Not that that's necessarily a scenario available to you. I'm just asking, is Nick Bosa as good as Josh Allen plus another player?
Yes, I think so. I think Nick Bosa is an arm and a leg better than any edge defender in this class. I think when you start to look at defensive interior, however, you have Quinnen Williams. I think he is an outstanding player at that position. And when you start to factor in his value and compare it to Joey Bosa, it starts to get hairy. I think that trade scenario makes sense slightly, but if you can get a Nick Bosa, I think it changes the game. I think for the San Francisco 49ers specifically, they've hit and missed along the defensive line in recent years, specifically with those first-round picks. I think you wish you got more out of Solomon Thomas. You even want more out of Arik Armstead. I think DeForest Buckner is starting to find his own, but even he hasn't delivered in as good as a Joey Bosa has or a Khalil Mack, other first-round edge defenders. I think the Niners want to get their hands on Nick Bosa if possible, if the trade makes sense. However, you get a Josh Allen, or even you settle for one of those kind of star-powered defensive interiors like Quinn Williams. I think Rashawn Gary is going to get some love. The guys out of Clemson along that defensive line will too. You have to start thinking about all those guys because this is a class so rich with talent along the defensive line. You start making trade-ups for Nick Bosa, I think it could be worthwhile, but I think there is also a lot of value to where you can kind of settle back and say, you know what, we can still get a very talented interior defender. He won't be the edge defender Nick Bosa is, but we can still get a talented interior defender and come out of this with a solid pick.
Austin, my guy, so happy to have you on my first show, bro. It's a pleasure as always. But I want to ask you, if I were to guess who would be your specific favorite prospect in this draft class, I would go with Quinnen Williams because I feel like I know that you like these type of guys. But I think here in the Bay Area, if you were to say the 49ers should draft Quinnen Williams, it triggers a lot of fans knowing to draft another defensive tackle, big man in the middle type guy. But Quinnen Williams is that good, right? I mean, I think that is not a terrible pick for this team. And we had people on earlier and people chiming in and they act crazy almost. But what do you think of Quinnen Williams, and is he that good to go number two?
Quinnen Williams, and I'll say this, and I will probably say it the entire draft, go through the pre-draft process, is that good. I don't care who you've drafted in previous drafts. I don't care who's coaching. I don't care who is on your current roster. Draft good players when they fall to you, and Quinnen Williams is exactly that. I think too many times decision makers, GMs, coaches, look at who they drafted in the past, and it affects the decision they make in the current draft, which cannot be worse. You know, you look at the Oakland Raiders in this last draft. We already drafted a safety. We already have Carl Joseph and Odell Bonner. Let's get an offensive tackle. Next thing you know, Derwin James is lining it up with the Bolts. You have to draft good players. It doesn't matter what position they play, because if you end up with good players and a bevy of talent at one position group, it's way better than reaching for a position that you need more and ending up with an average or even to a below average player that doesn't make the second contract. Quinnen Williams isn't the guy you pass on, regardless of who you have already on the roster.
Well, let me just play devil's advocate with that for a second, Austin. And our guest is Austin Gale, the NFL editor at PFF, Pro Football Focus. You've watched plenty of Niners, and it's not so much, and this is part of it, is you don't want to be the Matt Millen of defensive tackles. But also, it's not just that you've drafted guys there, it's that DeForest Buckner is pretty good and has a chance to be one of the better interior linemen in football over the next 5 years. You've got depth at defensive tackle. You have nothing on the outside, and your inability to rush the passer at all from the outside has made the life of the interior guys you do have a lot harder. I understand if Quinnen Williams is Aaron Donald and the next guy is the next edge rusher is me, fine. But if Josh Allen is a well-graded, potentially elite pass rusher, isn't it reasonable to consider, all right, Quinnen Williams may end up being the better player, but we just really need this other thing?
Oh, absolutely. It's reasonable. When you get to maybe Josh Allen and Quinnen Williams, you are splitting hairs slightly. You know, Josh Allen finishes the highest graded edge defender in FBS for Pro Football Focus's college grading. I don't think you're going wrong by bringing a guy like that there. But when you think about the value and where you're sitting in the draft, in that top end of the first round, I think as a GM and as a decision maker, and you start to consider that the value that you don't want to go with the best player available, that's when I'm picking up the phone and trading back. I think then you can gather more picks, you know, attack a position of need rather than kind of, because you don't want to pass on the best player available and then start to split hairs and go after another position. I think if you're going to do it anyway, move back, try and gather more picks. That way when you maybe get down to pick number six or pick eight, then you're getting attacking an edge defender at a better value spot. Of course, sometimes the trade down's not there and you kind of have to make a decision on the spot. If a trade down's not there, I'm still going to tout that best player available, even if you are splitting hairs between Quinnen Williams and Josh Allen.
So I think out here in the Bay Area, the Senior Bowl is either a thing that's not talked about or just kind of blown by, but the fact that both Bay Area coaching staffs will be out in Mobile. I just want to know your thoughts on how important the Senior Bowl is to prospects right now. I think it's very underrated how big of, you know, people take this very seriously, right? Like, I think this is a big deal to have these guys, the coaching staffs out there and the Senior Bowl in general. Just I'm interested in knowing your thoughts and if you can kind of explain why it is so important for a prospect and to have the coaches there.
It's so important. It's a win that you and one other coaching staff gets, and it's something that you have to take advantage of. In addition, I think all the coaches are going to get a chance to see the tape. The tape gets distributed to all 32 teams, and you're going to be able to be there and see the film there. But being able to coach these guys, see how they take criticism, see how they take on-field management, how quick are they to the drills, what time do they show up, all that intangible kind of stuff that is behind the scenes, and you get an opportunity to see that. That's outstanding, especially when you're looking at guys that you're high on, guys that you want to bring in. You can start to pick up either red flags or non-red flags when you're there coaching these guys up and seeing how they react to other players, how they react to the whole process, the media. It's you can only check boxes in the win column being able to coach there and see these guys in action. Not so much for their on-field stuff. Of course, you want to see a guy beat a guy in one-on-ones or, you know, have an outstanding on-field presence, but it's a lot of it is the off-field stuff and something that even, you know, as PFF, we can kind of overlook because we're grading so much of the on-field. But when you're there as a coach, you get to see how that player interacts with other players, coaches, media, and you really get to see who this guy is at his core. And so important when you're investing millions of dollars, high draft capital into a player, you want to see how this guy is off the field. And I think it's a good opportunity to do that as a coach at the bowl.
All right, so getting a little bit into what the Niners already have, as Austin Gale, NFL editor at Pro Football Focus, joins us. Everybody knows they need a pass rusher. I think one of the interesting things to me is a lot of people have said, when I've asked the question, what do the Niners most need, wide receiver comes up a lot. And I would like to hear your perspective on this, because from what I can tell, there is not a free agent wide receiver who would be a significant upgrade over what the Niners have had. And there's nobody, certainly first round level, coming out of college that would immediately provide that level of upgrade. So, two-part question for you. Number one, is that guy out there? And number two, if you've got Dante Pettis hopefully improving and Marquise Goodwin hopefully healthy, and most importantly, George Kittle on the team, is the thought that they need wide receiver help maybe a little overblown?
I think the answer to your second question, yes. I think Dante Pettis is only going to get better. He was a guy I was very high on coming out of Washington. I think he's a guy that the Niners are really going to like. I think it's easy to say wide receiver is a need when quarterback play is kind of up and down. I think wide receiver need shows up more when your quarterback's not hitting guys when they're open and really moving the ball downfield successfully. I think, yes, Nick Mullins did a good job as, you know, the interim guy, but they need a dominant signal caller to get the best of Marquise Goodwin, a healthy Marquise Goodwin, and get the best of Dante Pettis, even Kittle. I think Kittle gets open through the scheme, but I think he would even be better with a better quarterback under center. But, and as for, is there a guy out there? I think there's some upgrades you can make in free agency. I know Adam Humphries has a slot. I think he's a valuable guy that the Buccaneers part ways with him. He can be very good. It sucks for all of 31 other teams that Quincy Enunwa got locked up. I think he could have been a sneaky
He was my guy.
For a lot of teams. But, and then you look at the draft, I think there's some guys, maybe no one you want to take in the first round, no one you want to really draft, you know, invest significant draft capital into, but there's some guys later in the first, late first round or even day two. You look at a guy like, you know, Hakeem Butler is a guy that's drawing a lot of praise. Ole Miss's A.J. Brown is a guy I wrote about and looked at coming out of the slot as well. Kind of that new big slot receiver the NFL was taking to. There's some guys that you could upgrade there, but it's not a significant need. I would look to the defensive side of the ball 10 times out of 10 for the San Francisco 49ers team. Stir up that defense, inject it with talent, and see if you can move forward and start to win games.
I think when here in the Bay Area, as great as George Kittle has been, it's almost I feel like he's slightly taken for granted because he is looked at as the number one option. But I think once Kyle Shanahan starts to fill in these pieces, you know, from a guy who watches a lot around the league, I'm of the belief that there's only a handful of great tight ends in the entire NFL. And being able to evaluate and find and look a guy that looks like an absolute star in the fifth round is incredibly important for this team, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. How dynamic of a weapon is George Kittle? And once other pieces start to fill in and just having Lynch being able to identify a guy like that, to me, makes me have better belief in his evaluation general manager skills as a whole.
It's so impressive. Tight end right now is a position at a premium. You know, there's only a handful, maybe less than a handful of elite high-end tight end talent in the NFL right now. And it's a position that we've seen over the years struggle to stay healthy. They're on the field so much. They have to block a ton. They catch a lot of balls. They can tackle a lot. They get bruised down. You look at, you know, Rob Gronkowski has suffered with injuries. O.J. Howard was on pace for an elite season before he suffered an injury in Tampa Bay. It's a position that a lot of teams want to have a good one, but a lot of teams don't and struggle to find one. I think George Kittle is so dynamic because of his ability after the catch. He broke all of PFF records in terms of yak per reception, total yak by a tight end. He's an unbelievable player when he catches a football and is able to move forward, similar to Travis Kelce. And a lot of me thinks, you know, with that ability of the GM to find a talent like that coming out of Iowa, I think you look back at that position, try and add a second one. I think Kyle Shanahan's offense is one where if you had two good tight ends, you could make a lot of strides. I think having Kittle and another dynamic threat there would be a very interesting wrinkle to his offense. And you factor in a Marquise Goodwin and a Dante Pettis off of that, it starts to get really exciting over there. I think Jimmy Garoppolo maybe more than a lot of QBs, would love to have two tight ends as options coming out of play action.
All right. Austin Gale joining us, NFL editor at Pro Football Focus. And I want to jump to the defensive backfield for the Niners, because when you set records for lack of takeaways, that's never a good thing. I think Richard Sherman had a very good year, certainly about as much as you could have hoped for a guy coming off an Achilles injury. Everyone else who started the year in the starting lineup was pretty rough, but we did see some young guys come on late in the season and impress us, if nothing else. I guess my question to you would be, as someone who really breaks down the tape and tries to evaluate these guys as independent from scheme as possible, and just how good might they be, how real is what we saw from guys like Marcel Harris and Tavares Moore, and I think even DJ Reed got in the action at some point? And what does that reflect in terms of what this team still needs to add to the secondary heading into next season?
I think, you know, those last three players you mentioned had bursts where you're saying, wow, this guy has potential. This guy could play maybe long-term for us. He has that kind of talent or skill set in bursts that we like. However, that consistency in the secondary is such a valuable thing to have. And I think you have that with Richard Sherman, but you don't really have that with anyone else. I think trying to bring in some competition, some talent, whether it be through free agency or in the draft, with some of these talented cornerbacks coming out, you have Greedy out of LSU. I think DeAndre Baker in Georgia is another guy that is really fun to watch and could really come out and make some plays in the NFL. You have to take to the idea of maybe bringing in a guy in the secondary and upgrading there with someone that you think can be consistent through 16 games. You see how valuable that is for, you know, the New Orleans Saints. You know, Marshawn Lattimore, him playing as well as he has been incredible. Tre'Davious White in Buffalo, that kind of consistency is sought after. And I think it's exciting to think about that for the San Francisco 49ers, to bring in a guy that they want to make, you know, the guy after Richard Sherman is that consistent cornerback number one. And I think the 49ers have to think about that as a possibility, especially when you consider how few turnovers this team had. You need a ball hawk. You need a guy that can get after the ball. And I think that's what you got to look at the draft or free agency for.
And actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but, and maybe I'm just spoiled after watching Eddie Jackson for 2 years, but playmaking from defensive backs is one of those things that does seem to translate from college to the NFL, no?
No, I would absolutely agree with that. You look at DeVonta Casey. I think I may toot my own horn here, San Diego State alum. But he was awesome.
Shout out to the Aztecs.
Rocky Long is a huge ball hawk. And regardless of what he gave up in coverage, he was a little grabby. He kind of got away with pass interference. But there was always talk at San Diego State of him moving to Pittsburgh because he knew where the ball was and he knew how to go get it. And you look at him for the Falcons, even with the injuries they've had at safety, he's been able to step up and be a good ball hawk for them and create turnovers, force turnovers. And at the safety position, it's more valuable than even corner because you're given so many more opportunities to get at the ball, free roam, find it, target, you know, find it and attack it. And I think getting a safety like that is something the Niners have really wanted for a long time, to get a guy that can track the ball in the air and go get it. And you look at Adrian Amos, Eddie Jackson, both those guys have a tendency to find the ball in the air and go get it. So getting a guy like that as well, you think of Deontay Thompson, I think he's hands down the number one safety coming out in this draft. And to get a Bama guy like that, that we've seen have success elsewhere, you look at Eddie Jackson, Landon Collins, I think that is a very exciting prospect. Deontay Thompson is a guy I'm going to fall in love with. I know that. I think a lot of other teams will too.
I'm interested in understanding, before we let you go here, some of the guys that you're maybe watching tomorrow. You know, there's a lot of great college football, a lot of good matchups out there, but maybe are there any guys that, you know, aren't this top tier guy? I mean, we kind of know about Dwayne Haskins. We know about some people like Riley Ridley, Josh Allen. You know, for me, for example, I'm looking at a guy like Ben Burke Kervin, the Washington backer, who I think might be able to find a home here in the Bay Area. And is there a guy that maybe, you know, Bay Area fans should tune into tomorrow that hasn't been as hyped as he maybe should be?
I love that you brought up Ben Burke Kervin. I think he was the name that I thought of when you said tomorrow. I think he's the guy
nice.
That played so well in our system and plays so well against the run. At a class where you're looking for a stud linebacker, he has played very well. But there's a lot of names to like at that line in the linebacker class. It's a class that I think is getting overlooked because of how deep the defensive line is. We look at Ben Burke Kervin, Patty Fisher out of Northwestern, Dakota Allen out of Tech, the former Last Chance U star.
Yeah,
there's
love
a lot of, you know, Devin White. No, Devin Bush. There's a lot of linebackers in this class that can make upgrades. I think Ben Burke Kervin is a name to watch for sure.
That's good news, too, because the Niners definitely also need a line. They need help on the defense at every single level. We appreciate your help. Austin Gale,
Find him on Twitter at @PFF_AustinGale, G-A-Y-L-E. He is the NFL editor at Pro Football Focus. Tommy's close personal friend, and we appreciate your time, my man.
Thanks, Austin.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Austin Gale. Follow him on Twitter, seriously.
Close personal internet friend.
Frankly, you should follow everyone from Pro Football Focus on Twitter if you're serious about
the
understanding.
The best way to get smarter in football is reading and watching smart football people. Pretty easy.
Yeah. I would agree. And, you know, something I've realized as I've gotten older and what has made football, strangely and counter to many people, become more and more appealing to me as a sport as I've gotten older is just how technical so much of it is, how much there is for someone like me to learn. So, yeah, thanks to Austin for educating us a little bit. And now comes the time that I think comes to most New Year's Eve Day shows on sports and other radio stations around the country.
I'm excited.
And it's the time where we celebrate the end of the year. This is the last 20 minutes of radio of 2018 for myself and Mr. Tommy Call, my partner today, who, of course, you can read on the interwebs at 957thegame.com, in addition to some other outlets at various times. And now you're hearing him right here on our air. Has lent us a lot of NFL expertise over the course of the day, but now it's silly time. And when I get silly on the shows I host here, I like to play a little game. And this time, it is the year-end edition of Pick Up the Pieces. It's the time of my show when I play a song I particularly enjoy, and then I make the producer do extra work and come up with topics for us to discuss. And first thing I've got on this list, Tommy, athlete of the year?
I'm going first. I'm teeing up here.
You're number one, dog.
Okay, because I got a spicy one for this. Okay. And I'm going to go the guy who, and this might be a little bit of recency bias here, but athlete of the year, I'm going Baker Mayfield. The number one overall pick, the guy to reinvent the Cleveland Browns. I think an absolute star in the making in the NFL, a guy that we're going to be talking about for a long, long time. And we saw him win the Heisman, ball out of Oklahoma, all the Hugh Jackson, the Colin Cowherd. I love that. This is an athlete that is so easy to root for. Love the guy. I was a big fan of his at the college level, to toot my own horn. So he's especially to me. Love Baker Mayfield.
My question to you was going to be, where would Baker Mayfield fall on that list if you hadn't been one of the dudes screaming that he was the number one overall pick?
Probably a little bit lower. I mean, I really love the guy.
So this was more than anything a chance for us to just point out that you had this all the way.
Well, not that, because as a Miami Dolphins fan, I was praying that he didn't go number one, and by some miracle he would fall to us, because I've saw a winner.
Nah, you guys are locked in on Ryan Tannehill. Don't worry about that. If we're going athlete of the year, and I have to tell you, those of you listening will notice a very specific slant to my answers to a few of these first questions. There may be some recency bias involved. Athlete of the year is Khalil Mack. Why are we having this conversation? He's the best player in the NFL. He dominates everyone in the Bears. Bears are a great team because Khalil Mack is there.
So I can see my own home. I can toot my own horn, but the guy wearing a Khalil Mack jersey right now, so the people at home know.
Popping the Khalil Mack jersey, mind you. Popping it. Thanks, baby, for the Christmas present. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's right. Damn right. Chicago. All right. Sports moment of the year.
This is another super easy one. The Miami Miracle. Adam Gase's final win with the Miami Dolphins.
You know what? Putting aside the Adam Gase stupid part that you just did, that's not a bad take. Yeah, I know it's a biased take because you happen to be a Dolphins fan, but that was an unbelievable play.
Have you ever seen anything like that in your entire football career?
I've never seen anything like it. Yeah. And here's the other thing. You know who else was a Dolphins fan at that moment? 90% of football fans who think the Patriots are a pile of steaming crap. So that was a great moment for all of us, really. We all
guy Nasher in the back there.
Nash is a Pats fan?
Yeah.
Nash, Pats and Lakers? You a Yankees fan too? Don't turn the mic on. We don't want to hear from a Pats fan.
I was serial texting him my reactions and how I felt in the moment, not even realizing how big of a Patriots fan he was. I was just so unbelievably
shameful.
Locked in.
Shameful. Probably roots for the Yankees, USC.
The Lakers.
Ugh. All right, what's your sports moment?
It's Khalil Mack's first game with the Bears when he showed up out of nowhere and sacked everybody the whole game and made everything great. That's it. My answer to every question is Khalil Mack.
So
preview. Mack's the best thing that ever happened in my life.
Can we just skip the next question of acquisition of the year? Can we just skip that one?
For me, we can, because it's Khalil Mack.
But what's your acquisition of the year?
Man, I don't really know. I was trying to get a little creative, go a little outside the box.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it's hard to go against. But, I mean, honestly, a guy like Zion Williamson to Duke.
But he hasn't happened yet. To Duke.
Yeah, seeing this guy that we've seen, and I hate Duke.
How much does Kolsky care about college basketball?
But I mean, I just think he
said acquired by Duke, and I was like, he hasn't been drafted yet.
I just think that the dude's pretty incredible to watch, and hateable because I hate Duke, and it's just college basketball is at its best when the power guys are doing their thing.
I have to be honest with you. This is going to be turn the music a little down. As a matter of fact, we might need like something emotional for this. Can you get me like some emotional music? Because I have to make a very serious admission to you. This is going to be hard for everybody, I think.
Uh-oh.
I really want to get the right attitude. Thank you. All right, Tommy. This is hard for me to admit.
Oh, boy.
I've been a Duke hater my whole life.
Yeah.
They disgust me.
Me too.
The very colors. Now, I know you like Kentucky, but I look at that little Blue Devil face and I want to vomit. Jason Williams with a Y. No, it's not with a Y, is it? Still one of the most hated athletes of my lifetime for getting drafted by the Bulls and then crashing his motorcycle, wrapping his motorcycle around a pole.
Yeah.
Furious still about that. Yeah. Just Duke makes me furious my whole life. Hate Duke.
Yeah.
I've been listening to the JJ Redick podcast.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I've become kind of a big fan of JJ Redick.
Wow. He's like the poster Duke guy.
I know. And I don't know if it's that I was inappropriately softened by JJ Redick and that's how we got here, but I kind of love this Duke team, dude. Yeah.
Well, I think to the Kentucky fans out there, the few listening, i.e. my dad,
you're screwed.
Who are like, why would you pick a Duke guy?
Oh, you're done, son.
I want Duke to be good because I want to beat them. I want to play them. Yeah, well, that happened earlier this season.
It doesn't matter.
It was a 30-point loss.
It doesn't matter.
But I'm just saying, I want these teams to be at their best. Being a Kentucky fan, you want to play the best. You want to beat the best. I don't want no easy walks. I hope we play them in the Final Four and destroy them.
Good luck with that. It's unbelievable to watch them. My mind is blown.
Underrated acquisition of the year?
I think it's a great answer. All right, we can go back to the good music now. Not that this wasn't good music. The hype music. Back to the hype music. We're happy again. And I apologize to everyone out there for not hating Duke anymore. I know I should hate Duke, but I can't help it. Zion Williamson. If we start talking about how the Bulls might have a chance to draft him, we're going to totally lose me. So let's go. We got some non-sports related things
on
here.
I'm excited for these ones.
You wanted to go album of the year.
Yeah.
All right, hit me.
I'm going to go Mac Miller Swimming.
Mm.
And obviously rest in peace to a legend in my lifetime, a guy that I grew up listening to. I think Kids came out when I was in a sophomore in high school or something like that. So hit me right at the right time. Yeah, I think before his passing, this album was truly incredible. It showed his music ability, how much he was not just a rapper, a musician, if that makes sense. And literally listening to this and having respect for it, I was absolutely enamored. I think Nash can attest to this. I was texting him, you have to listen to this, you have to listen to this. And a lot of people were willing to write Mac Miller off because a few of his albums prior to this weren't that great. You could say it was for a specific audience, but this was just a work of art, and it's still right now. I can't believe the dude's gone.
Yeah, it's a bummer, and I can't argue with anything you just said about that, except to say Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer was definitely the best album of the year. I had Mac Miller too, no disrespect, and I think everything you said about the album is right. Janelle Monáe is the queen of the music world, as far as I'm concerned. Shouts to Cardi B as well. I think we both liked what Cardi B contributed this year. Oh, so your artist of the year is Cardi B.
Yeah, that was my answer. Yeah, just again trying to be a little different here.
That's not different.
Yeah,
Maybe it's different. Maybe when you're hanging out with a bunch of sports radio personalities, it's different.
Yeah.
But guess what? Cardi B is almost everybody's artist of the year.
Yeah. Her antics are hilarious.
I totally agree.
And some of the stuff she says in her songs are just legit
phenomenal.
Make me laugh out loud.
Phenomenal. She's hilarious. If you have not seen the Carpool Karaoke featuring Cardi B, strong recommend for me. Very strong recommend on that. I would check it out immediately. All right, movie of the year. You got movie of the year for us?
Yeah, I was very critical of a lot of the movies that came out in 2018. No, not one stuck with me, and it's weird. I'm almost giving this award. I'm going to go Ready Player One. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
You know what? I kind of want to cancel the segment.
Okay. Well,
Ready Player One is movie of the year?
I legit could not think of a movie that really did anything for me from 2018.
It wasn't a great year for movies, but let me just list off 10 movies very quickly that are better than the one you just suggested.
And if you, this is on the fly a little bit.
I have 20, but we only have time for 10. Eighth Grade, much better. That was my number one movie of the year. A really heartfelt drama about an eighth grader incredibly unique film. Really well done. Made by a comedian named Bo Burnham. Wrote and directed it. Very strong recommend. Number two, Sorry to Bother You by Oakland's Own.
I would have guessed that would have been your number one.
That's my number two. Oakland's Own. Bootsy. Sorry to Bother You. One of the weirdest movies of the year. I don't know.
On Hulu right now, right? I'm pretty sure it's
on Hulu?
Yeah. So anybody who hasn't seen it.
It is really out there, incredibly bizarre, but also one of the most creative and thoughtful and interesting films I've seen in a long time. Black Panther was my number three. If you're going big pop movies, Black Panther's twice as good as Ready Player One. Don't be ridiculous. Number four, Green Book. Really underrated holiday fare. A little bit... it's a little melodramatic, but
really, I lost this argument.
Really well acted. Number five was the Robin Williams documentary. I think Bay Area people will especially enjoy. It was called Come Inside My Mind, available on HBO. That was five. Six, Black Klansman. Seven, Death of Stalin. Eight, A Star is Born. Nine, Game Night. 10, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, currently available on Netflix. I have lots more. Text line shouts to White Boy Rick. I didn't actually see that one.
I actually want to see that. Matthew McConaughey.
Yes. Hip hop album of the year from a 510 texter. Fetty by Freddie Gibbs and Currency, produced by The Alchemist. I love Freddie Gibbs. Gangsta Gibbs is one of my top rappers, and I will not disagree strongly with that take at all. 650 texter said best movie of 2018 is Infinity War.
That's an honorable mention.
Best selling movie, not the same as best movie. Bonte Hill, our very own, texting in. Travis Scott, J-Rock, Kendrick, YG. Kendrick's album was just kind of an EP this year.
And
so
Tommy
I don't know.
And he said Tommy is drunk. Shout outs to my guy.
Well, of course he said Tommy's drunk. I was gonna let that
love
slide.
Love talking music with Bonte.
The J-Rock album was good. I don't get YG, so I'm not going to weigh in on that. The Travis Scott album has bangers, but it's too long, man. That was my problem with a lot of albums this year. Nicki Minaj, there's bangers on that thing. It's too long. Lil Wayne, half that song is killer. Or half that album, rather, is killer. The rest of it, I don't remember what it sounds like. 510 text, I totally agree with this. I saw this the other night. It wasn't on my list because I made the list before I got there, but probably would get into my top 10. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Truly one of the best animated films I've ever seen in my life. One of the best superhero films I've ever seen in my life. Go see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It is excellent. Excellent.
High praise.
I'm not a cartoon guy. Rick and Morty, keep it. Don't care. The Simpsons, whatever. Like, I don't dig cartoons. South Park, don't get it.
All right, really quickly, though, I want to know your Netflix show. You can be in movie of the year and then also your rookie of the year.
Oh, God. Netflix show of the year. Was Mindhunter this year?
No, I don't think so.
You know what I really liked? I'm just going to go recent, and I really liked it because I don't have... Oh, by the way, another album of the year, Black Panther soundtrack belongs on that list.
Shout out to R.O.B. Paramedic.
For sure. So much happened in Netflix programming over the course of the year. But I can tell you two things about recent stuff. One that I loved and one that I thought was... not good. Roma,
which is the Alfonso Cuarón Netflix released film getting a ton of attention, to me is a flat, beautiful, but completely meaningless and frankly plot and themeless film project. It's a senior film thesis that looks beautiful and it's being treated like a best picture, and that makes me sad. The other thing, and this might be under the radar for people, Texter said Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. I'm a what's the word? Sissy. So I don't watch scary stuff, so I can't comment on that. But I can comment on a weird little entry from Netflix called The Kominsky Method, starring Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin. And I will tell you, no disrespect intended to anyone, I feel about watching stuff with old people similar to how I feel about watching cartoons, which is I'm generally not interested. And this 30-minute comedy was some of the most enjoyable TV I watched all year long. Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin in The Kominsky Method. It's just about a couple of old guys dealing with life. Mm. And I thought it was really funny and also pretty emotional.
I love any Netflix-created show. I'm a big fan
of it.
Right, you're going to get some weird stuff in there, but also some really good stuff. I really like Narcos Mexico.
Oh, I've been watching that. Very,
very
good stuff.
Very, very good.
You know, I'm not usually a subtitles guy either, but I for this, I'm in.
It's weird because the you know, these drug dealers are awful people, but incredibly fascinating when it comes to television.
We root for bad guys all the time. It's part of the fun of entertainment is that, I mean, we got movies where you're supposed to root for bad guys. Frankly, even like a John McClane, Die Hard, that's not a great dude. He's not the best guy. He's a... Wait, you're telling me to look at the text that says, Kolsky, you're a bum? Is that from one of you and the other? So the producers
that's
are texting the text line
Gabe.
Now. I had nothing to say about Bird Box to the texter who sent it in 7 times because I haven't seen it. And again, I'm not really into scary
stuff. Either.
Isn't it scary? I think it's supposed to be scary. I don't know. Someone said it creeped him out. All right, Tommy, we made it.
It was fun. I just really quickly, though, I got to give it a little shout out. My first time on the air. Shout out to my guy Nasher for supporting me and all the guys in the back. You know, I interned here in college and got hired here as a producer for them. So I feel like they're all, you know, they're all behind me, all the guys that I worked with. And, you know, it feels really good to be out here with the support of those guys back there, because I sat in that chair at one point, and everybody back home in Santa Rosa, Sebastopol, 707. I've gotten a ton of texts, and I mean, it's been absolutely phenomenal. I don't even really know what to say. So I appreciate it, Matt.
Well deserved, my friend. It's been a pleasure to work with you. Thanks to Grant Cohn. Thanks to Sam Amick. Thanks to Austin Gale. Ray Rateau on the airwaves next on 95.7 The Game.